Welcome to this special coverage, Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. Hosted by Todd Alba and Kristen Bry, live in Milwaukee on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
They are broadcasting from Whitetail in the Deer District across from Fiserv Forum, where the first Republican presidential primary debate is set to take place tonight. They'll be joined by a team of political experts. Learn why Wisconsin is ground zero for winning the election, what national Republican insiders reveal, and hear about the Democratic strategy for the Badger State in 2024.
Now, special coverage of Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. Here are your hosts, Todd Alba and Kristen Bry.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to Whitetail, Milwaukee, across from Fiserv Forum and the Deer District here in Milwaukee to the Republican presidential debate. We are about 2 hours away from at least those who showed up, former President Donald Trump, not amongst them, and one other candidate, actually in the hospital. But Kristen Bry, this is a spectacle. Oftentimes, it's the Milwaukee Bucks or Marquette playing basketball. Tonight, a spectacle of a different sort.
A different kind of sport, someone right. might say. But yeah, it's been very exciting to be down here all day. We've seen some people in costume. We've seen some signs as far as debaters and not debaters, but protesters and counter-protesters kind of around the Deer District. But if anything, one thing that everyone can agree on is that it is very hot.
It is very hot. The sun is setting and causing a little bit of trouble for those who are streaming. I wonder who scouted this place out. Oh, it was me, so that's on me. But the sun will set soon behind the Fiserv Forum. But the ramifications of tonight could last on. And joining us tonight, two very special guests. We're happy to have them. The founder of the Lincoln Project, Rick Wilson, and senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, Travy Olson. Gentlemen, welcome. Thanks for making the trek here to the Badger State.
Great being with you.
Yeah. It's awesome to be home.
What do you guys, as you look at what's going on tonight, what are the kind of the big things that you're looking at? I mean, is this just all, as Kristen said, a game tonight? Or are there real serious ramifications that could come out of this?
Look, this is a political sideshow tonight. Let's be real. You're going to see Ron DeSantis flailing around on the stage a little bit. He's the one with actually the most to win or lose tonight. But since his campaign has been in free fall for weeks, the empty lectern on the stage that Donald Trump should have is why this won't matter in the end. You know, you're going to get more viewers watching Tucker Carlson and Donald Trump most likely than watching this debate.
That's your prediction.
Absolutely. And the fact of the matter is, not one of these people is willing to be serious. Not one of them. Even Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson were sort of the non-Trump candidates. They're going to go out there and say, well, of course I will pardon the great leader. Of course I will. I will vote for him in the end. You know, he's a criminal. He's horrible. He's the worst human being ever. He's destroying American democracy, a threat to the republic. But I'll still vote for him because of Hunter Biden's laptop? What? I don't know.
So I guess my question then becomes, and this is for either you, Trickvy, or Rick, is why run at all? Why is this all just pageantry then, as far as if none of them are going to be serious and they're spending the money and they're here and they're not going to take the swing and be a contender, why do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, sometimes you'll have candidates who will run to promote a specific policy. Like if you think back, Ron Paul was running to sort of promote libertarianism. Then you got guys like Rick Santorum who were running for Fox News contracts. And then you get people who are running to be VP. And then you occasionally get the few that are running to be President of the United States. You know, DeSantis, which is kind of funny since he's basically told Scott Walker to hold his beer in terms of the quality of the campaign he's running. You know, Ron DeSantis is now, I'm the only one who's running for president. You know, that may be true, and he may be running the worst campaign, well,
probably the
even like, worse than Scott Walker's, actually, which is saying something.
Would you say he's the Tim Pawlenty of Scott Walker's?
He might be. He might be. And as I said earlier, you know, this debate is like the AL Central of politics, right?
Right.
Like, you win by losing. So
both of you guys, and for those who might be listening and say, well, yeah, I have no interest in voting for any of these people tonight. I'm planning on voting for Joe Biden. But Wisconsin is ground zero for this 2024 election. I think the interesting part that both of you bring throughout the night tonight, and we're going to get more into this later, but give us a quick preview. You've both been in these green rooms. We're now less than 2 hours away from the stage. You've been, tell folks who you worked for at Republican Party politics, presidential campaigns. What's going on right now?
Well, look, I in the spin room with Rudy, in the spin room with Marco, some in the 16 cycle in the beginning before he collapsed, and with Bush in 2000 and 2004. I've been around the block, seen this rodeo a couple times, and with Cheney at the vice presidential debates in 2000. So we have a situation right now where in every other debate, there's clearly a front runner in the field in the room, and everybody's going to go at that person. Right now, there's a front runner in the room that none of them can go at, that none of them have the courage and the will and the moral strength to go at. They don't, I mean, even the ones who say he's wrong, he's bad, he's evil, will not say, and I won't vote for this guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to do it. There's my red line. And you know, even if it costs me this race, I'm going to stand here and I'm going to take the brave moral stand. I mean, the one guy that might have done that is Will Hurd, but he didn't make the debate stage. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're going to see tonight a lot of posturing, a lot of second tier guys looking for the second tier job.
You know, I mean, what's going through people's heads, and like in 08, for example, when I was in the room with McCain, mm-hmm. we were thinking to ourselves, all right, what can we do to make Rick's life as miserable as possible over in the other green room? And that is really how you think about it. And then the next thing we were thinking about is, like, how do we find Rick and Mike afterwards to drink some beers and chuckle about it, right? And,
right.
But, you know, so it's a little bit like a pickup sports game. I was saying to you guys earlier, you know, grew up playing ice hockey, and when you're playing against the guys on your own team, you divide up and you go at it, but then after the game, everybody goes and drinks beer and friends again. That's kind of the way these things usually are. But now with what Trump in the mix, you know, and not showing up and playing by a totally different set of rules in a different game, you can't really do the whack-a-mole, and I'm pretty sure that Team DeSantis and Chris LaCivita, who's running Trump's campaign, who's in town, they're not all getting together afterwards because there is that divide in the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you saw it, but actually earlier today, Trump's Super PAC put out a website that you can go to vote for your favorite vice president with all the candidates who are here tonight.
Look, I mean, as is fairly well known publicly, I'm no fan of Donald Trump.
Really?
No, yeah. it might have become clear over the last 8 years or so. But look, the guy is in the commanding position right now in this race. None of the dynamics of this race so far have changed in any meaningful way that make me wake up and think, wow, that Vivek Ramaswamy fellow sure is running up the score.
So what would have to change for it to change?
Trump would have to die, be eaten by a shark, struck by a meteorite, and put in jail. Then the jail would have to be hit by a nuclear bomb from North Korea. Then the nuclear wreckage would have to be taken out to sea and buried in the Marianas Trench 28,000 feet below sea level. And then it would have to have concrete laid over it by the mile so that no possibility of Trump emerging from his watery grave was possible. There is no circumstance where they get to get away from his presence.
And he'd still probably pull 20%
right.
in the Iowa caucuses.
Right.
In New Hampshire
and then prior. Donald Trump Jr. would say, Dad, I hear you. I'm challenging you, Dad. Oh, Father, love me finally. I will run in your place, sir.
I wish you would not hold back, Rick. I wish you actually tell
us. I'm
so
undiplomatic.
I just think, you know, it says where the party is that even the ones who are the establishment supposedly more normal, less MAGA candidates are all going to stand up there and pander to MAGA. I mean, you're going to see Nikki Haley do it. You're going to see Tim Scott do it. And the other, you know, dirty secret of where the party is at this point is you have Donald Trump in Iowa running at about 42-45%, maybe in the Seltzer poll that just came out. You got Ron DeSantis, who's literally talking about slitting people's throats on day one, who's at 17, and Ramaswamy, who's literally a 9/11 truther. Between the three of them, you have 80% of the Republican primaries voting for people who aren't serious at a time when, you know, you're looking at what's going on around the world, there's a lot of serious stuff happening.
Yeah, the 9/11 stuff is, I think, Ramaswamy walked into that. He's going to face that tonight. And I will say this, and I all facetiousness aside, on 9/11, Mary Pat Christie was in the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. And Chris Christie had no idea if she was alive or dead. So if you don't think this is personal for him, mm-hmm. and that he's not going to take Vivek Ramaswamy's head off and kick it around the stage like a soccer ball, you are mistaken. That guy, the 9/11 thing for me, it's like Ramaswamy had a kind of quirky charm up until that. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe he was going to like rise a little bit. But he's just another conspiracy goon. He's just another weirdo with Russian inflected websites and comes out and, you know, obviously we must have had something to do with 9/11 because come on.
But here's the thing. I just want to add a point on that. I mean, Rick, you remember in South Carolina in 2012.
Oh, yeah.
Ron Paul tried to suggest that Osama bin Laden had rational reasons for what happened on 9/11. And he was booed off the stage.
He got
lit up.
They cut the bark off that guy.
And here's the thing. I think if one of them mentions it tonight, I don't think you would see that happen again. Maybe not. And that tells you how far the Republican Party has descended into fear and grievance and, quite frankly, outright lunacy in some cases.
You guys know the issues, know this country better than anybody else. We're going to bring on the chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin here in just a minute. We're going to ask him the same thing. What do you think the two biggest issues for Wisconsin voters and then in the nation, if you want to add on to that?
Well, I think the first thing is, and I think the chair will have a little bit different perspectives, but we're going to say the same things. I think for the kind of voters that we at the Lincoln Project focus on as former Republicans are these voters who are like Dobbs dads, mm-hmm. who are people like Rick and I. They're girl dads who are pro-life and who became conservatives because we didn't want government telling us what to do. But by God, I don't want theocrats telling my daughters that they're going to have to live by laws that were passed in 1848. And, you know, people like Scott Walker telling them what to do. So those people are very movable, and they're the difference of, you know, a state where 17,000 votes may be the difference. They matter greatly. I think the second thing is Joe Biden has delivered, and they're delivering things like, for example, rural broadband in Sauk County, $28 million, that are the kind of things that, like, Tommy Thompson and Republicans used to be for and now are not.
Very good. Rick Wilson, Trigvi Olson, we'll talk to you in just a bit. Thanks for being here. But stay tuned next. Kristen and I sit down with the chairman of the board, or at least the chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, Ben Wickler. He's with us live. Don't go anywhere. We're live from the Whitetail, Milwaukee, outside Fiserv Forum here at the Republican debate. You're listening to Civic Media Radio Network.
Now return to special coverage of Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. Once again, Todd Alba and Kristen Bry.
Thank you, Todd Michaels. And you are looking live behind us, as Brett Musburger used to say. Well, you can almost see it as the sun sets at Fiserv Forum in the Deer District here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the site of tonight's Republican debate amongst the candidates who are healthy and who are here. One person who certainly is here, along with Kristen Bry, my co-host of As Goes Wisconsin, every morning from 10 until noon, is the chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Ben Wickler. Mr. Chairman, thanks for making time for us.
Great to be here with you, Todd, Kristen, and all listeners of the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's a busy day today.
This is a very busy day. This is an all eyes on Wisconsin kind of day. And it's fascinating to me that the Republican Party dared to put their primary debate here, because the messages that we're going to hear on the stage are not going to help them win the general election.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because that was actually, we've been here all day broadcasting live, had a lot of people coming in and out. And one of the things that was brought up was, how much is this potentially going to backfire for the Republican Party by putting not only tonight's debate, but also next year's RNC in a place that is not very Republican, let alone not super happy that they're here?
My hope is that everyone in Milwaukee, everyone in Wisconsin watches tonight's debate and takes notes, because this is uncut present day MAGA Republicanism. This is a group of people trying to, you know, essentially show who they really are before they put on whatever armor they're going to switch into for the general election next year. And I'm struck by the fact that although they've lost over and over in 2018 and 2020 and 2022 and 2023, none of them is running on a, hey, maybe this isn't working for us, guys, platform. You know what I mean? Like, even the anti-Trump Republicans are like, if we just got rid of Trump, the rest of the MAGA stuff is great. And that, to me, is a total misread of where the public is. But we're going to hear it from the debate stage. And, you know, when people show you who they are, believe them. That is my message to everyone in our state tonight.
For those that might not be familiar, they're just tuning in tonight to our special coverage. I'm a former Republican, was part of the Republican Party for 30 years. I left in 2011 over voter right issues in the state of Wisconsin. For years, Mr. Chairman, as Republicans, we heard how Republicans raised more money and the Democrats, you know, tried to organize grassroots so that we just beat them. And Republicans said, we don't want to hear about the fact that money is free speech because we'll just outraise you. You as chairman, Ben Wickler, have turned the tables. Democrats in the state are now outraising Republicans consistently and winning elections. What have you done to turn that around and make Republicans now whine about money?
Well, I mean, first I'll say, if Democrats get the power to change our campaign finance laws, we should. In my view, it is wild how much power money has in politics. But the collapse of local journalism in so many places across Wisconsin has meant that people wind up getting a lot of their political information from the ad campaigns that, campaigns run. So I don't think the system that we have right now is so great. But given the system that we have, what we've done at the Democratic Party and what I think Democratic candidates have done for these last several cycles is to make the case across the country that what happens in Wisconsin defines the future of American democracy. It's not just about the lives that we all lead as Wisconsinites. It's also that we're the tipping point state in the Electoral College. We're the state that might have the Senate majority in its hands in 2024. We might have the House majority in our hands, too. That's the whole trifecta. And, of course, the Senate plus the White House equals the Supreme Court. I mean, if Trump wins again, he appoints potentially, you know, Alito and Thomas could resign. We could have two more Supreme Court nominees in the mold of Brett Kavanaugh coming from a future Trump presidency. So it's all on the line for everyone. Every person on earth who will ever live will be affected by what happens in our state.
And you hook Kristen up with Julia Louis-Dreyfus from Seinfeld. I'm a little jealous of that.
Oh, yeah.
Man, she's tuned into Wisconsin. Everyone's tuned into Wisconsin.
And that is what's been so fascinating about leaving for 17 years and never thinking I would be moved back to Wisconsin, and then moving back and realizing when it comes to politics, this place is incredibly, incredibly important. And so one of the things I think the criticisms of maybe a Ron DeSantis campaign or some of the MAGA issues in general is this kind of divide between the very online rhetoric and the, for lack of a better term, real people rhetoric, but they're not online, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that also exists in the Democratic circles and the left-leaning circles. And so when you think about outside of anything that happens tonight, all the different demographics, all the different groups of who the Democrats need to appeal to going into 2024, how much of that is online and how much of that is kitchen table?
So I don't often quote Kellyanne Conway.
Oh.
She's not my main source
really?
Of political information.
I'm shocked.
I'm not a believer in alternative facts, but she often said in 2020 that people vote on what affects them, not what offends them.
Hmm.
And online, it is a attention economy built on what offends people. That what creates a rage reaction right away is what gets clicks, what explodes, what goes viral. But fundamentally, you know, for people who might or might not vote, or who might vote either way, it tends to be people who kind of hate politics, who don't want to think about politics all day long, and they will be motivated to vote if their sense is that this is going to intervene in my life unless I get out in front of it. And to me, the issue of abortion and reproductive freedom is the perfect example of an issue that goes outside of people's partisan scripts and goes to their very personal questions. People thinking about what will happen to them if they have a pregnancy and something goes terribly wrong. People thinking about what will happen if there's if they get assaulted and suddenly they're carrying a pregnancy that they never intended to have. That is so personal for people. It has nothing to do with what they see on Twitter or X.com, I should say, or like any of that stuff. It's their real life. And that is why that issue has turned non-voters into voters and has swung voters to cast a ballot for a party that normally they would have no time for whatsoever. I think the question of whether we should have a democracy where the voters decide who is in power in this country is another issue like that. It's kind of a baked-in thing that we all grow up thinking that we live in a democracy in the United States. But if one party wins the election and then suddenly that election is overturned, that is kind of a what is happening in my world question that goes beyond this, you know, everyone in their trenches, partisan warfare day to day. And that, to me, is the core of what happens in 2024. For all the personalities, for all the posturing, for all this kind of stuff, it's actually these questions about, not about how you feel about this or that candidate, but about what kind of world do I want my kids to grow up in? What kind of world do I want to grow old in? That is what ultimately is going to determine the next election.
Mr. Chairman, about 45 seconds left. You're going to hear a lot over there tonight about what Republicans haven't done. But Democrats, will come back after the break. If you could stay another 5 minutes. Can we get another five minutes?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Another 5 minutes. We're going to ask him what Democrats are doing, what the Biden administration has done, what you're not going to hear over there. Don't go anywhere. We're live from Whitetail, Milwaukee, across from Fiserv Forum on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Now return to special coverage of Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. Once again, Todd Alba and Kristen Bry.
Welcome back to Whitetail, Milwaukee, across from Fiserv Forum in the Deer District, along with my co-host, Kristen Bry from As Goes Wisconsin, heard every morning from 10 until noon on the Civic Media Radio Network, and the chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Ben Wickler. We are here, and, well, just under 90 minutes to go, as maybe some sweaty palms over there across the street.
Sweaty palms, sweaty foreheads,
right?
Sweaty armpits, probably with a couple wardrobe changes today.
Marco Rubio, remember when he did the State of the Union years ago, the response, he got so sweaty, he was drinking water. You don't want that. You don't want a Marco Rubio incident. We're going to come back and talk to the chairman in just a second. But Terry Bell, our news director here at Civic Media, has given us some nonpartisan context, because whether you're a Democrat, whether you're a Republican, Wisconsin's in the spotlight. And I think it's important to stop and look at the history of Wisconsin. So, Mr. Zommers, if we're ready back in Madison, we're going to roll this A Moment in Wisconsin Political History from our news director, Terry Bell.
You're listening to Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the GOP nomination begins here. I'm Terry Bell of Civic Media News. The Republican Party was officially founded in 1854 in what's known today as the Little White Schoolhouse in Ripon. The party emerged in opposition to the expansion of slavery into new U.S. territories. In 1856, Wisconsin became the first state to elect a Republican governor, Alexander Randall. During the American Civil War, the Wisconsin Republican Party was a strong supporter of the Union cause. After the war, the party continued to advocate for civil rights for newly freed slaves during the Reconstruction era. In the late 19th and early 20th century, the Wisconsin Republican Party was also associated with the progressive movement. Leaders like Fighting Bob La Follette played a key role in advancing progressive policies. After World War II, conservatives began to dominate the Republican Party. Senator Joe McCarthy of Wisconsin rose to national prominence over his anti-communist views and for being a primary instigator of far-fetched and often false attacks at a time that came to be known as McCarthyism. Currently, the Republican Party of Wisconsin controls one of two U.S. Senate seats and six of eight U.S. House seats, as well as majorities in both houses of the state legislature. The party holds one statewide executive office, that of state treasurer. Important Republicans from Wisconsin in American history include former Defense Secretary Melvin Laird, former Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson, former Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, and former White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus. You're listening to Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the GOP nomination begins here. I'm Terry Bell of Civic Media News.
Thank you very much, Terry Bell, our news director, and Kristen and Chairman Wickler. I think it's important sometimes just pause and reflect, as our colleague Matt Flynn likes to say, look at history. And civil rights, progressives, Bob La Follette, Ben Wickler, that ain't the Republican Party of today.
I wish it were. I mean, A bipartisan Democrat, I'm wearing my Abraham Lincoln socks today in tribute to the Republican Party that was. And if we beat this Republican Party enough, then maybe that Republican Party will come back. You know, if you look at history, parties evolve. If they lose often enough, then they rethink how they're approaching things. And to me, the only way we're going to get past this mega moment when the GOP is full of, you know, abortion banning, election denying, book banning, hardcore ultra mega right wingers is for that to backfire so colossally that no, you know, young ambitious Republican who wants to arise to national power would ever think about touching that kind of politics. That's, as far as I can tell, the only way that we're gonna cure this disease.
And it's interesting because, you know, we as Wisconsinites, we just got through what feels like another big election in April. That was a landslide it was a nonpartisan race, but because of money in politics, because of the ideological split, because there is a lot on the line as far as where people are with abortion, I think redistricting played a part of it too, but certainly abortion. What, going into 2024, do you have to do to keep that firewall up, that enthusiasm up? Because we saw numbers, we saw turnout, especially for a nonpartisan spring election, that is fairly unprecedented. And so what do you capture from that and take into next year?
Well, if you look at the spring Supreme Court election, it was kind of a distillation of the, as Biden puts it, the battle for the soul of America. On the Republican side, Dan Kelly was an advisor to the fake elector scheme that tried to overturn the election results. He was the lawyer who fought to defend the gerrymandered maps. And he was a dyed-in-the-wool, hardcore, total abortion ban extremist. And Janet Protasiewicz, you know, said over and over, she would never prejudge a case, but her personal values, which voters have a right to know, are that reproductive health care decisions should be made by the people who are affected by them, not by politicians, or let alone politicians in the year 1849. And the maps are obviously rigged, which now Republicans are complaining that she said that during the campaign, but Robin Voss himself has said that partisan advantage was part of how they drew mm-hmm. their maps. Everyone agrees they're rigged. The question is whether it is constitutional to rig the maps, and that is what the court has to decide now. So the issues were really plain as day, and I think for Democrats, it's a reminder that you actually have to make this about voters' lives and not about the, you know, this or that, like, putting fingers thing about the candidates. It's about the voters. So much of politics, so much of the way that the kind of 24/7 cable news cycle works is about these minutia, these little gaffes and missteps by the candidates, as though we're all in cults of personality that are duking it out. But it's not professional wrestling. This is actually people's real lives and their experience. And to me, the way that Democrats succeed is by going to the voters, meeting them where they are, asking them what they care about, and making sure that they have the information they need to know which candidate will affect their life in what way. You don't have to be flashy. You don't have to be blazing with charisma. You just need to be on the side of the voters and make sure the voters know that and make sure they know what the other side is going to do if they have power. That's how we make the difference. And that is at the core of our strategy as a party. Year-round organizing in communities, neighbor to neighbor, people talking to people that they know, trying to cut through the noise. That's what, you know, civic journalism at its best. That's what I think civic media does. It helps people understand the stakes for themselves of all this stuff that where people put up a lot of smoke and mirrors and theatrics to try to make it about the candidates. That's what democracy should be about.
Mr. Chairman, and those who are just tuning in, you are listening to Wisconsin Decides 2024. We're covering up to the pregame show, if you will, to the Republican debate across the street from us in Fiserv. But the sun is now just going down. The beautiful sunset here in Whitetail, Milwaukee. Talking to you along with Kristen Bry, talking to the chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, Ben Winkler. Mr. Chairman, you heard Trigvi Olson of the Lincoln Project. Like myself, he is a former Republican. I think what you're going to hear across the street in a while is a lot of attacks on Democrats and Joe Biden in particular that nothing got done. And Trigvi mentioned this before the last break or a couple of breaks ago. This week, the Biden administration announced $28 million released to the Reedsburg utility for high-speed internet and actually making a difference in Richland, Sauk, Iowa, Dane, and Juneau County, a Republican stronghold. Meanwhile, how are Mark Klein and Tony Kurtz on the Joint Finance Committee, Republicans in the state legislature, vetoed Governor Evers' money that he $200 some million to put into high speed internet. Is it those sorts of real issues that Democrats have to use to fight back to what you're going to hear tonight?
Absolutely. Democrats don't win by going for pie in the sky, ideological mega concepts, arguing about wokeism and this or that. They make their case by laying out what they're going to do to help people in their lives, to protect them from extremists who would take their freedoms away, and to make sure that they have the basic things that everyone should have to be able to lead a successful life, to open up opportunities, and then delivering and making sure people know that they deliver on those promises. That is, if you look back, that's how Democrats have won when they have won. When they stray from that, then they can get in trouble. And frankly, if you look at 2016, so much of the argument against Trump in that election was that he was so offensive. He was so offensive. But that actually is not ultimately the way that Democrats win elections. We win elections when we connect people to people who may be skeptical about whether they agree with Democrats about this or that, but they know that if they can't check the market conditions to get products from their farm to market, then they're going to have trouble making ends meet, and Democrats will make sure they have that connectivity. They'll make sure that the roads are paved so they don't have to break the bank buying new tires for their cars and their trucks and their tractors. Democrats win when we actually make sure that the water people drink is safe. And Democrats win when we protect the basic freedoms that people count on to lead the lives that they want to live. We're a big tent party. We only succeed when we are a big tent party. And that is a very different kind of battleground than what Republicans will be talking about tonight.
I want to switch a little bit over to strategy for down ticket races for next year, which is up in the air, right? There is a chance that, depending on how the redistricting lawsuit goes, we not only could have everyone in the assembly running, we could have everyone in the state senate running, and we could have new maps, and we could have more districts that are competitive. Now, in the past, I think there's been criticism of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin in how much they've been able to support down-ticket candidates instead of putting a lot of faith in the statewide races because it's not gerrymandered, right? And so, depending on if we get new maps or if we don't get new maps by next year, how much does that change resources, money, attention to congressional seats, like making sure there's someone who's running in all 8 seats, and for state assembly and for state senate?
It's a huge, huge difference. In 2022, we discovered on April 15th, the day candidates were supposed to start collecting signatures, that the maps had been totally redrawn to match the fever dreams of Robin Voss. We had maps that, with Biden's victory, gave Republicans, if you map state legislative votes onto the presidential votes from 2020, gave Republicans a supermajority in the state Senate and a near supermajority in the state assembly. That was a presidential, that was 50-50. We were entering a midterm where the kind of pendulum swing of politics would give Republicans a built-in advantage. And under those maps, they had every chance of getting supermajorities in both electoral chambers. So there was a huge crush, like a rush on the Democratic side to find the candidates in the most competitive districts and make sure that they had the resources they needed to be able to pull it out. And we did by a hair's breadth.
Yeah.
I mean, Republicans were 2,499 votes, that's 0.01% of the votes cast in the state, away from having supermajorities in both chambers to override the governor, all because of gerrymandering. If we don't get new maps, we're in the same fight. We're in the same fight to prevent them from getting that tiny, tiny hair's breadth of an extra edge. Hopefully we pick up some seats and create a little bit more breathing room. But if we do get new maps, it's not just that we could perform better. It's also that many more districts will suddenly become competitive. Because when you look at what Republicans have done, it's not just that they want to make sure Republicans win everywhere. It's that they don't want actual democracy anywhere. They want as few competitive districts as possible. They want a kind of static, locked-in system where the only thing that matters is Republican primaries. We could have democracy in the state for the first time in a long time. My oldest child is 11 years old. Mac has not been alive since we had a democracy in the state of Wisconsin.
Wow.
And that means that people anywhere in Wisconsin that are listening right now, If you've ever thought about running for office, this might be the time to get ready to do it.
I was going to ask, does that mean recruitment starts now?
Recruitment starts all, yes, months ago, just in case. We don't know where the district lines will be, but this might be the year to run and actually have a shot to introduce yourself to a group of voters who could decide the fate of the future of Wisconsin after a long time when their votes have essentially been meaningless because of Republican rigging of the maps.
Mr. Chairman, Kristen spent time, her parents are originally from Wisconsin Rapids. I grew up in Richland Center, both in rural parts of the state. Lots of ability. I think Bill McCosha said earlier, for Democrats, you know, just light a fire in Dane County and it goes like wildfire, a match, I mean, to get voters out in Dane County for Democrats. But how do you connect with people like Wisconsin Rapids and Richland Center and Superior who might not necessarily be Bernie bros?
Well, right now, and this was all over the state this last weekend, the Democratic strategy is to go out and not to sell something or try to persuade people of something, but to knock on doors and ask people what they care about. We call it bridge-building conversations. So we're literally just trying to build relationships and learn where people are. And that gives us the basis to then come back and say, well, you know, you laid out that what you care about is reproductive freedom, or what you care about is, you know, roads or economic opportunity or schools. Here's what Democrats have done. Here's what Biden would do. Here's what, you know, Leah Spicer running for state assembly again would do if she won this district. You have to meet voters where they are. And I think that's maybe a different mindset from thinking, you know, we're going to craft the perfect TV ad and then run it 24/7. But if you actually build those relationships and take the time to listen, most voters care about things that Democrats actually can do something about.
Ben Wickler, chairman of the Democratic Party, we thank you so very much. Your time is valuable. We appreciate you. And thanks for being here tonight.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, our pleasure. Kristen Bry, Todd Allball, back with more after this. Professor Charles Frankler, what do the numbers say? And Rick Wilson and Trigvi Olson for the Lincoln Project rejoin us. Don't go anywhere. We're live at Whitetail, Wisconsin or Milwaukee. This is the continuing coverage of the pregame show to the GOP debate on the Civic Media Radio Network.
A special coverage of Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. Once again, Todd Alba and Kristen Bry.
District as we await the start of the Republican presidential debate just over an hour away. We're not bringing it here live to you on Civic Media simply because we can't. If we could, we would, but you have to go over there to, what does Crudy call it? The Foxy News, Kristen?
Foxy News. We didn't. So shockingly, they didn't give us the rights to actually play the debate.
I know. You would have thought they would have done that.
We asked so nicely.
Todd Allball along with Kristen Bry, host of As Goes Wisconsin, every morning, Monday through Friday, from 10 until noon. And great to have you. We rarely get to work in person together. And this is fantastic.
It's been very fun to be with you all day.
Well, it's been fun to be with you as well, my friend. We are joined by other friends at the table, old and new alike. We are happy to have the founder of the Lincoln Project here. He is Rick Wilson, along with the senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, Trigvi Olson, and a Wisconsin native, a great whiskey aficionado, and all things numerical in his head. He is the director of the Wisconsin Marquette Law School poll, I should say, and the most respected poll here in Wisconsin. And I think, Trigvi, would you agree, one of the most respected in the country?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, no question.
And Rick as well.
No question.
Well, I'm not going to disagree.
Well,
but thank you both.
I want to start with you, Charles, if we can, because you're somebody who follows this continually, both in the Wisconsin and in national politics as well. It was brought up earlier today when Chris and I were here during a panel with journalists that your poll shows this primary much tighter in Wisconsin than some of these polls across the country. What say you?
Yeah, well, that was early June, and DeSantis was still doing okay. He's fallen off considerably since then. However, if you look at recent polling in Iowa and New Hampshire as well, Trump is not doing as well there as he's doing in the national polling. Nationally, he's typically between 50 and 55%. In those Iowa and New Hampshire polls, it was more in the upper 30s or low 40s. We had the race 31-30 with Trump ahead in June, but as I say, we've been tracking DeSantis's decline since March. We haven't done a poll this month, so I can't tell you that. In our national polls, we show Trump at 47, DeSantis at 23. Again, a substantial decline for DeSantis, while Trump has moved up in the late spring but has been pretty steady since.
So statistically speaking then, looking at the eight people who are here tonight, is there an opening?
Well, there's certainly the opening for who's the alternative to Donald Trump.
Okay.
For a long time, it looked like Ron DeSantis had the chance to be that. One interesting thing about DeSantis is he's very well liked by people who also like Donald Trump. So he could be the threat from inside the House, except that since January, he's failed to take the advantage of that opportunity. Tonight's his chance to maybe resuscitate the campaign. But I really thought he was the thing that Republicans who say, I love Donald Trump, but maybe it's time to move on. Maybe it's time to get a younger guy, get somebody who can serve two terms, something I've heard in focus groups repeatedly. I think that DeSantis' decline, though, leaves the door open. Can any of these single-digit folks make enough of an impression tonight to get a couple of 3 weeks of good coverage and make the most of it, or, as often happens, have a brief rise followed by a collapse?
Has it happened before? Is there anything in history that has said that going from a single digit going into this first debate, there can be that ascension?
There have certainly been surges from single digits up to 15-20%. But we've often seen one candidate make that rise and then come back down. Another candidate make the rise and come back down. So it's a real trick to convert that short-term surge into actually overtaking the front runner. And it has to be said, Donald Trump has a bigger lead at this point than previous front runners have had.
Rick, as someone who has run presidential campaigns, been a part of it for a number of years, on the Republican side, do you use guys like Charles, at least their numbers, their statistics, when you make those decisions about what you're going to do in a campaign?
Well, look, campaigns are vacuums for data. So you would obviously, especially in Wisconsin, look at the poll, look Marquette poll. You would consider it in the face of everything else you know from your own internal numbers, and you would study very carefully. You know, whether there was a sort of cohesiveness between them and cohesiveness in the trends, especially. You know, in this case, I don't know how much data we're deriving out of the single digit folks. Even if you see a big move in some of them, you know, Donald Trump is still plus 50% on them. And we're not talking about having a year to beat him down now. The primaries are coming. They're not in a half a year now. They're in about 140 days now.
Right.
So we've got a big sprint where most of these people, the other big issue about them, most of these people, just the fundamental, their name ID among Republicans is really, really low. And Trump's is 100%.
That's crazy. I mean,
he is absolutely cooked in. The base knows who he is, and they still like him.
Trigby, we talked about our show before. I want you to bring it up, and I want Charles, you to respond to this from a statistics point of view, the numbers. Talk about your hockey buddies up at River Falls, the ticket splitters.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, in the general, it's going to be Evers-Johnson voters in Wisconsin who, assuming Milwaukee and Dane County kind of balance out the Wild Counties and Brown County, that are going to be central to deciding this. And, you know, Charles and I, this has kind of been an ongoing conversation with the two of us, both online and offline. You know, those guys are going to be critical in terms of determining.
Charles, got a minute before the break.
I think those sorts of split ticket folks are important. It doesn't have to be a big sliver of the electorate when we're deciding presidential races by 20,000 votes. I also think I want to pay attention over the coming year to the people that are somewhat unfavorable to both Trump and Biden. Mm-hmm. Because that's a pretty big group right now. As they become the nominees, I think parties will come back together. But, you know, we saw this in 2016. People who didn't like both, and some stayed home and some voted third party. What's going to happen this time for those folks that, especially Democrats, who aren't thrilled with Joe Biden, wish he was 20 years younger. But when the choice is Donald Trump or a third party candidate or stay home, what happens to them?
Next hour when we come back, we're going to talk about this. What happens when I don't like any of them? You know, what happens to those folks tonight? Also, we're going to bring in Will Walter. He is the host of a co-host of Town Call. How about the youth vote? I mean, we saw this in the Proto Sandwich race earlier this year, guys and gals. What happens to those people? Are those young people going to turn out again? And what's driving them? So we'll come back and talk about that with Professor Charles Franklin as well. I guess we got maybe a minute left or so, Kristen?
I think that I'm excited to talk a little bit more about exactly the groups that Lincoln Project targets and what you're hearing, Charles, on the polling of that, of the disaffected Republican voter, the people who feel like they have no party. I know my father is one of them. I know a lot of Republicans who are never Trumpers. And where do they go? And so what issues do they care about? Is there a candidate here tonight who could capture them again? Or are they just lost in the abyss?
Lost in the middle. That'd be a good name for a podcast, right? Yeah. Stay tuned to Civic Media for that. Stay tuned to hour number two. We are live on location at Whitetail, Milwaukee. Kristen Bry, if I get your name right, Rick Wilson, Trigby Olson, Charles Franklin, Will Walter, and many more. Don't go anywhere. Hour two is next. We're live in Milwaukee on the Civic Media Radio Network.